Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Myself and Gareth Bark are joined by Craig Clark and Gary Foster. And I want to start the show by inviting any of you to say something positive about yesterday's game.
If it gigs it to the end of the season.
We do have to try and talk about this for 45 minutes. Any volunteers to go first? Craig, anything you want to get off your chest?
Well, in fairness, if you want to start with a positive...
Who stayed till the end?
I lasted till the end.
Yeah. I didn't,
know. No, me neither. I was surprised at you, didn't I? I think what I liked about it was I think when Villa scored the third, a lot of people thought, right, I'm going to the bar. Mm. And on the way down to the bar, they scored the fourth. So they thought, right, let's make that the exit door, didn't they? Like, let's just do a little slight detour away from the bar, out the exit. We saw loads of people try and get out at half time. Like,
I've never left a game.
That's why I was surprised you did.
At half time. I've never left, rarely leave early, not even a couple of minutes. In all the time I've been going, 20 years or whatever. But yesterday it was just, you know, there was that, just the moment when, after that fourth one, you know, people can talk about, you know, you support the team till the end and all this. But when, you know, ball breaks to Bakuna on the right after that fourth goal and he's standing on the ball practically and there's four or five Sunderland players literally walking, not engaging in the game whatsoever. I'm not going to sit there and watch that, like, unless I have to. Like, I mean, I shouldn't have to. Like, I'm not. It's unacceptable. So,
big crowd there yesterday as well. It was just
tickets of the season.
Yeah, up to a point, certain minute, and then it
tailed off.
But I think I guess Gary, it's easy for people to say, oh, you know, I would never leave a game early and stuff. But I guess that's the only power fans really have to show that they aren't happy with the situation. Right, we'll go home and show them.
Yeah, well,
I'm booing every touch or something.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I can obviously understand people's frustrations and obviously tempers get the better at times, but I think leaving the game early is far, I don't know if positive is the right word, but far more positive, I guess, than throwing scarves and season tickets at people. I don't go in for that. You can have your say, you can have your shout, and you can walk out and let people know how you're feeling. I'm not sure what throwing a season ticket at somebody does, but
especially if you're like a middle-aged bloke, if it's like a kid or whatever, you can understand it. But when there's like a 35, 40-year-old bloke chucking his season ticket at him,
I guess that's what the passion of football does to you. But I think leaving it before half time or leaving before then would have been far more dignified response.
Would have been interesting to see what the crowd was the next home game if it wasn't a derby game.
It's a good point.
But now obviously that's going to be full anyway.
Has it sold out?
I think it's
not quite. It's on
purchase history only, I believe.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I remember the.
You don't have to go, mind.
That's it. People could, but you've given the money. I think that's one of the things with football. When on a wider scale, when people complain about some of the stuff in football, and people say, "Well, vote feet with your feet, don't go." But a lot of people do commit to a season long, sort of like, you know, I'm going to go. I've got my
season long worth of struggle.
So you've paid your money, so not going. All right, it's not going to look great if there's empty seats all around the stadium, but the club's still got your money, so it doesn't really make any difference. Speaking about leaving early, my dad, he was gone before half-time with my brother-in-law, and that's pretty unusual for my dad. And he was saying, like, I'm thinking, he's tried to talk us all into renewing because we've all been thinking about sort of maybe giving it up a little bit, and I suppose I was always going to, and then he's, like, the one saying, I want to cancel it. I think the only other time I can remember him leaving that early was when we played in the Premier League under Reid, the first season we went up. I think we were playing Spurs at home and we conceded four against them at home, and he left about 60 minutes. And that was going through my head as we were losing, and I was thinking, and yet somehow that was better. Not even as bad as this. And then I was thinking about like stuff like the obvious examples, the Charlton game at home under... Wilkinson, it was Wilkinson, wasn't it? Yeah. And and I didn't leave early for that one even, and that was worse yesterday in a way than that, because people always say this, and I usually have none of it, like, oh, at least they tried in the 15 and 19 point seasons, but to be honest, that was actually worse. And that's twice this season, at least you can say they've just given up, because the Southampton one as well.
They couldn't kick off. They failed to kick off properly twice. First time led to the second goal. I mean, and then they kicked off again and gave the ball away from the kickoff again. I mean, what is going on? I mean, it gets to the stage where, you know, like, I've been a big supporter of Gus and what he's trying to do, but since January, everyone's screaming for change. He's trying to change it, but he's changed it every week to try and do something different to try and make it work, and it's not working.
Isn't it now?
And now it's just the baby's, like, not even three. Well, the baby's, you know, in the Atlantic, you know, out with the bathwater. Dear me, it's gone. Like, there's no way he can get back to what he was trying to do now.
But it's strange that he almost thinks that this is what the fans wanted as well, when I'm not sure that's entirely true, to be honest.
Well, fans want to win, so I think that...
And we weren't far away from it, were we, really? I didn't feel like we were before Hull, and then...
Well, people have got it in their heads about, you know, it's negative or whatever, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you're setting up to try and win games the best you can with the players you've got. That's not necessarily negative. It might not be the most exciting or best football you'll ever see, but at the same time, there's a plan. What you saw yesterday, I mean, you can go back to Hull as well. I mean, God knows how we got out of Hull with a point. I mean, Hull was arguably worse.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Gary, what's worrying for me is, well, I was sitting at Hull and I thought, after 60 minutes, I thought, this is the worst 60 minutes I've seen from a Sunderland side in years. Now, the substitutions changed that game. We managed to nick a point, but this was even worse against Villa. So that's two games in a row now where you're looking at probably the worst performance you've seen in years, and you can't draw positives from that, really, can you?
No, and I think the big thing for me was having been there yesterday and then having watched it again afterwards.
Why would
again?
You do that to yourself?
Imagine getting going
in my house.
Because I knew I was coming on here today, I had to make sure I got a few points right. And there was one point where I think it was somebody was down injured, and Poirier called about three or four different players towards him, and I'm watching it on the telly. And you can see them talking to them, and they're just putting their heads down and, like, sort of looking away and turning away, and you're thinking, really? Like, the way things are going, and your manager's telling you how he wants you to try and change it, and you're basically looking like you're just not interested,
they didn't
you
want to
don't
be
there,
care.
Did they?
No.
If somebody had offered them a chance to go off at half-time 4-0, half of them wouldn't have come back out. I mean, Fletcher put a shift in. It wasn't great, but at least he was trying. Others were just walking about with their heads down. Like, the amount of money they're on, and I know money doesn't come into it too much, but the amount of money they're on, the amount of people that turned out to see them yesterday.
Can the manager rectify that, or is that a sign that maybe he's losing the dressing room's gone, isn't it?
Well, it's not a sign. I mean, it's evidence to suggest it has. I mean, it's done, isn't it? But...
I mean, they bounced back from Southampton quite well, but it's an ask to do it twice in a season, isn't it?
You've got to have a platform to bounce back on too, and there's nothing there.
Nice easy game against Newcastle coming up. What do you mean?
But there's nothing there. There's nothing. There's no pattern of play. We've bought, like, Defoe, right? And a few of us talked about it at the time, and to be fair, initially it looked as though Defoe might have had a positive, in the sense that they were trying to almost brought Poyet on to try, and he was trying to do some different things to try and accommodate him, which meant it gave us options. But the problem is, none of those options really worked. He scored twice. I mean, he's had a couple of good performances. He's not been brilliant. I don't want to, like, slate him, but, you know, a few of us were accused of being negative in January for saying he probably wasn't the player that we needed, because it completely deviated from the perceived plan.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where we are now. We signed one player in January, it was him, and he looks completely ineffective in whatever system you play.
And we said at the time, didn't we, we're about to find out if Gus Poyet is a good coach here, because he's having to move away from his default setting now.
Yeah.
He's out of his comfort zone. And it's a little bit erratic at the minute. I've been saying for weeks on here, it's the wrong time of the season to start with your trial and error, isn't it? And it doesn't look like we're going to stumble upon anything successful anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, look, Gus is the manager. The buck stops with Gus. But if we're going to start pointing fingers, then there's other people need to, you know, strap a pair on and take their share of blame. There was 11 players out there yesterday. Yeah. None of them did a shift. You've got to look at the everybody harping on about the financial fair play rules, which has stopped them basically for having the massive overhaul of a squad that's battled relegation God knows how many times in the past few years, and it's still the same players pulling on a shirt, and yet we expect them to be a little bit better, we expect them to be a little bit different, and it's still the same people that were fighting relegation last season, it's still the same people that were fighting relegation under previous managers, it's still the same personnel by and large, and yet we're expecting something different.
It's interesting as to where the blame lies, Craig, because the conversation we were having in the pub after the game was, we weren't sure who to blame for. People say, are we blaming the manager? Are we blaming the players? Who? And nobody could really put a case either. We're not sure who.
Everybody's got to take their share. I mean,
because you can't just blame the manager players. Well, the effort the players were putting in. That isn't the manager's
fault. Best will in the world. If you put, if you had Jose Mourinho in the dugout yesterday and he sends the players over the white line, there's no way Jose Mourinho can do anything about John O'Shea ducking a header or getting a header wrong and then just turn around going, not my problem anymore, you know, and leaving it to the goalkeeper who's, like, against Agbon, all he's got's pace more than anything else. Do you know what I mean?
And he's just washed his hands. Bad Lord just does every time. He always seems to have a good game against
Benteke as well. I mean, he got that hat-trick down there the other year, didn't he? Yeah. When Canio was here, and
was arguably worse than that yesterday
in many respects.
I think seem to me to be the only team in the Premier League that doesn't have pace anywhere on the
just
field.
The left back, but he doesn't play left back, so
and he goes up that quick and then can't get back.
Well, he doesn't know where he's meant to be half the time. That's his problem. It's not just getting up and down the line. I wish he was doing that. There's countless times he's chasing and harrying in the way Larsson does, but he's a central midfielder. And it's like, no, you're meant to be at left back. Why is Stephen Fletcher sitting in the left back position covering you when we haven't got the ball? Like, that's absolutely ridiculous. Right,
Fletcher, at one point yesterday, had made a tackle on the edge of his own box, and you're thinking, really? Why on earth is he anywhere near that? He shouldn't be anywhere near it at all.
We've been having problems down that side for a while, haven't we? And
to be fair,
partly Van Aanholt's fault and his performance levels. I'm not going to totally stick up for Van Aanholt because he had a stinker yesterday. He's had a couple of stinkers. But he often gets left exposed as well. And
he does.
You looked at that yesterday and thought, well, Stephen Fletcher on the left forward position.
Well, even if it wasn't him,
well, that's why
it was the alternative.
Wickham there, though, wasn't it?
Well, Wickham generally is a better fit, isn't he?
Yeah,
well, Alvarez was the other one.
Yeah.
He's playing a striker in a left wing position because he's not too sure about the full-back. So what does that say at the striker? And what does that say at the bloke who wants to play left wing? I mean, it just...
Well, we haven't got anyone to play left wing.
We haven't got a winger at the club.
We haven't got one. I mean, Buckley's injured. Johnson's away.
The only one's Watmore, really, who, bizarrely, Poyet sort of talked up and doesn't even put one on
the
bench. But it's not even just about throwing the kids in. It's at least he is a winger. So what have we not got?
I agree,
pace?
Yeah. More than anything, it's the unknown quantity as well, isn't it? We saw that with James McLean, didn't we, a few years
back? Exactly, that was what's coming to mind.
Yeah, and he only had a decent 12 months or whatever it was, but initially he had an impact because it was a surprise element to it.
With McLean, that was O'Neill. He obviously looked at the squad and thought, I want to play in a certain way. And this guy who's in the squad, he might not be the best, technically, we've got, but he'll come in and he might be able to offer me something I need. Now, the problem is, like what you touched on earlier, Gareth, I'm not actually sure what Poyet wants to do at the moment. I don't know. At the Defoe signing, to me, it's been the disaster it could have been. I know it's not over yet, but he can't accommodate him. Even if we got rid of Poyet, which we probably should, I think he's lost the dressing room or whatever, you bring someone else in. You look at Sherwood and you look at what he's got at Villa. He's put two wide men out there, Sinclair and Zogbia. He's got two good central midfielders. They're not like heavyweight, they're obviously quite small, but they're quick, nippy, they can pass it, and he's got a big forward and a strong forward and a pacey forward. We've got not a single combination like that you could put out. The only one I can think of is Catamol and Rodwell in central midfield would work as a two. The rest of it is a complete mess. It's impossible to really... I was thinking about this morning, the only thing I could come up with was put maybe Van Aanholt on the left wing And Buckley, if he's fit on the right, and I mean, Christ, if that's your wingers, go. If no. you want to play 4-4-2, if you want to play to four, unless you go that's three at the back, it's got to be 4-4-2. That's what we've got, because Alvarez, he's not the man you want in a relegation battle.
Shall you see Ivan Gus first?
Yeah, well, Ivan Gus
will do some more morning.
Yeah.
I need to perform. I'm a believer that football is all about Saturday 3 o'clock. I say it all the time, when we win, when we lose, when we are good or bad, I'm not going to change now. You can do things in a certain way, in the way. You can train a little bit longer, a little bit shorter, indoors, outdoors. But at the end of the day, it's about Saturday 3 o'clock. You know, I'm responsible. I'm not going to change. I said a few weeks ago, I said last year, this is the way I am. I'm going to take it. I'm not going to hide. So it's no problem. I need to analyze the game. I prefer not to comment, you know, now, because it's not the right time to comment in certain things. And anything can happen anytime, and it's just to concentrate on things that happen. Why? Who is ready to fight? Who is ready to, you know, do things right, and who is not, and keep making decisions. And I thought the team started very well today, so now we don't have the excuse of QPR, that we started very bad, and that's what we lost. So what we lost today, because we started very well. I mean, we can look for excuses. I'm not performing 90-plus minutes, doing the right things, defending when you have to defend, passing the ball, plenty of things that we didn't do right, and we are putting ourselves in a difficult situation with no sense, because it's no real sense, and it's the way it is. You cannot hide.
Doesn't sound like Gus knows any more than we do as to what he could
like
do.
When I listened to it, when he was saying, oh, I don't want to comment on the game and stuff like that, I was just thinking, oh, I don't know. I just, that's done. Like, you just feel that. I feel the same way as walking out of the game yesterday at half time, which I've never do. Walking away, I felt the same after as when Bruce went.
Yeah.
The same as when De Canio went. Felt exactly the same. It just feels inevitable, and it's really sad because I like him.
Yeah.
I like what he wants to do, but it just, there's no evidence of what he wants to do anymore, because he's tried to change it to make it better, and it's just got like worse beyond, like, you can't even imagine how bad it could be. And we're there again. I mean, why is it always happen? Why does it always happen to us? Why can't we just have a, you know, 18 months of enjoyment for a change, instead of having, you know, just lurching from disaster to disaster?
Down to player recruitment, Craig?
Partly, at least.
Hasn't been great in the last 12 months, has it?
Last 12 months. Stretch that a bit further back, can't you?
Yeah, no, but I guess I'm just trying to relate it to this manager, specifically.
What Gary was saying before, well, is Gus in charge of player recruitment? Not particularly. So if it's, but the ones he's probably responsible for, Liam Bridcut, Will Buckley, not good enough, really. No. The ones he's not responsible for, has he shown an ability to, what do I do with Jack Rodwell? Doesn't look like he knows. He was a slight bright light in a very dark day yesterday. But when he's running with the ball first half, who's offering him an angle?
No, nobody.
So you think, who have we let go? Players we wanted rid of? People like Craig Gardner. No one wanted him here. We've replaced him with worse.
Yeah.
Jordi Gomez has got no heart. Like, at least Gardner would put a shift in for you. Someone like Phil Bardsley, who I used to think was, we need to move away from players like that. At least, you know, he put a shift in, and it's weird that we're going back to saying we need a player who will put a shift in, because we haven't even got the bare minimum.
And that's what the approach he took before the whole game, wasn't it? I was saying. He put in, he says, I'm picking players who are gonna fight and scrap. And
yeah.
I was thinking about this yesterday, actually, and I thought I probably wasn't critical enough of Gus after that, because if that was McCarthy or somebody doing that, I would have really went for him there. And, this isn't any different, so I don't feel like he can get off of it either.
I mean, it's a weird situation, really, because he had a bit of a pop, didn't he, at the fans, sort of, a while back, saying he didn't understand what he was trying to do, and fans wanted the real era back, and they've just wanted a, like, 100 mile an hour and crunching tackles and all that. And it's fair enough, and I accept that some fans, I include myself among them, probably do need educating in different ways of football. I'll hold my hands up. But if it's not working, it's not working. And fans are going to go back to those days. Fans who weren't even born then still harp on back to 1973 because the last time the club won something. And that's what football fans well, are. They're going to look back at when things were brighter and when things were a bit better. You know, everybody forgets at how badly the Reid era went at the end of the Reid era, and we just harp back to the good old days.
It wasn't exactly... you know, helter-skelter stuff at the start either.
But I don't even look that far, but I look at just Bruce and Kane when they were winning some stuff. Winnable home games.
Yeah, we just won
and that was
home
all right.
Games.
And this is me sort of sticking up for Bruce here, because that was the right time for him to go, because he'd lost that, hadn't he? When he sold Henderson and let Mal Bronco and all that, and he replaced him with the players he did. Similar to what we're seeing now, he'd lost his way, hadn't he?
Is that
where we are now?
I think the recruitment thing is a good point, and you go to January and... This was, again, probably talking about again, but that was the baffling thing, is that there was this plan. He wanted to do this. Now, what you do is, surely, logically, you look at what you've got, you look at what you're trying to build, and then you say, what do we need in here? We can't stretch teams. We've got no pace up front. We need to sign a forward. Get a forward in who's a bigger lad, he's quick. Get someone in like that who's going to stretch teams. If you're a bit deep, you've got somebody to get you out. You want to pass the ball in midfield. We've got nobody to pass it really well like we had Key last season. Somebody like that. So you're looking at, there's two players. You're struggling in defence as well. They probably need a centre-back. So there's three positions that you're looking to strengthen, really. Maybe a winger, right? There's
four. And you're
bringing
four. In an ageing central striker.
So what you do is, no, let's not do any of the things that are going to make what we want to do better and move it on. We'll sign somebody who's completely against everything and build a team around a 32-year-old striker who's been playing in America for a year.
And it's a stopgap anyway because of his age. So
I mean, I don't want to like pile in on Defoe, but like,
well,
it's not really his fault. But I mean, he was one yesterday, absolutely disgraceful the way he was going on, shrugging his shoulders, waving his arms around. Come on, I want more. I want more from you. Guaranteed goals. Where are these magical goals that you were going to score?
This whole director of football thing, which we've discussed. Initially, it obviously, a role is only as good as the man fulfilling it. Mm. And also the structure in place around it. So when you hear director of football, you think, we'll keep talking about them. Clubs like Swansea, Southampton, stuff like that, where player recruitment, even Newcastle, player recruitment is above and beyond the head coach or manager. But you've got to get that player recruitment right. Now, if you want to go down the cost-cutting route... One of the things was, one of the problems has been that the player recruitment, whether it's a director of football or a manager, has been short-termist or poor. So Bruce, great example, gets a load of money from Henderson and other players, wastes it.
Yes,
but then O'Neill tried to go down the other route of, right, well, we've got this team here, so we'll bring in a couple of quality players, or what he thought were quality players, to build on it. Turned out the players that were around them weren't good enough. Here he goes. So then we get a director of football in with Di Canio, bringing a raft of players who have all gone now, except what, Mannoni and Giaccherini? I mean, Giaccherini's barely featured, injured all the time, and even when he was, he's never really settled properly. And then now we've got a new director of football, and they've said they want young, British-based, hungry players. So we're signing a 32-year-old who's been playing in the MLS, or people like Jordi Gomez, who... If he's
Ricky Alvarez.
Ricky Alvarez. Who's responsible for that signing?
It's almost
is
worth
Congan?
Getting relegated so you don't have to pay 7.5 million quid for a minute.
We need
Jesus.
To find out if that's true.
Well, but these are great examples.
But
of...
I bet in Milan they're just like, they're 10th in the league, but they're not bothered. They're just like, well, you know, at least we don't have to deal with that next season.
But this is it. Who's responsible? Like, someone like Virginie, right? I quite like him. I think he's okay. But at the same time, what's the point in him? Is he? He's not going to offer you the pace, strength, power that we need at centre back. He's another slow, kind of sort of a ball player.
You want him as
a
squad player, ideally, if you're going to have him, wouldn't you?
You've gone all the way to Argentina to find him. Mm. Is he really worth going all the way to Argentina to find? And the problems we had signing him, like the amount of time that was toiled over bringing him in, Quattes. What was
forgot
it
about him?
Exactly. What's the point in that?
So is Gus.
Well, Revier, who's responsible for him? Say it's Congerton. Decent, you know. But come on, he's not finding. It's horrible trying to compare us to Newcastle. And I don't think they're, you know, some of the players they've got, it's more the price they're getting them at than the player themselves that's been so remarkable. But obviously, a lot of that's gone wrong recently for them. But we've not even found one. We're overpay for young players, Wickham. Rodwell, looks like we've overpaid for so far. Or we get absolute bargain bin, like, £1.99 DVDs that nobody would have wanted to buy. You know what I mean? Like, the rubbish you're getting out
there. Straight to DVD movies.
You've never heard of it before. It's like the fourth in the series of films that couldn't make
Michael
it to the
Douglas's
cinema.
First film.
Yeah,
that
kind of trash.
Yeah.
That's your Patrick Van Aanholt at the minute, anyway. He looks like that kind of... Or Gomez, who was relegated with Wigan. And I know he didn't play yesterday, but you can see why that Wigan team used to get turned over. And it's interesting that it's not really working for Martinez at Everton at the minute as well, who's got a similar philosophy. And I said when Poyet came, and don't get us wrong, I've backed him and I've said good things about him when he's been here, and I'm really disappointed it's not working out. But I thought when we got him, football's moved on already from that Brendan Rodgers possession stuff, because even Rodgers has moved away from it. And I felt like it's gone. We've got this Dortmund intensity, Atletico Madrid, if you're talking at the top, and it sort of trickles down, if you like, they're the models now.
Well, not too much Dortmund this season.
Well, that's it, but even that goes in cycles. So, but you look at the best teams, like Liverpool, when they're at the best, it's pace, intensity. Even Villa yesterday, quick passing, pace. We haven't got players who can do that. So even if you wanted to change it, we're struggling because, like you say, player recruitment. But ultimately, surely the buck stops at the very top. Who's employing these people? Why do we keep chopping and changing? If there's no consistency of model in recruitment and the way the club's structured, why would there be any structure when it comes to your manager and the team selection? It's a mess.
I mean, to the other side of the coin is for Congleton, I don't really know at all, but what's he been given to play with? Has he been given buttons to go out and sign whatever? Has he been told that this is what we want? Because, you know, everybody raved about him before he came. It was another one of these, oh, he's done such a good job here, and he's been there. Seems strange that overnight he's gone from being this guy who knew all about football to some bloke who hasn't got a clue.
I wouldn't go along with the fact he's saying he hasn't got a clue, because I think, again, in the whole blame game, who do you blame? And it's this thing, it's like nobody really knows, because it's like, you know, there's some sort of cancer going on there.
Yeah,
it's like
definitely.
Everyone who gets in the club gets inflicted with this burden, this toxic
stuff. So if that's the
case,
right?
And you're just thinking, why? What's happening? Like, they almost needed an auditor to go in and go and look at it and go, what on earth is going on here? Where are you going wrong? And it doesn't... I don't know if it's, you know, anything that's in the hub of the club with regards to the youth setup, whether it's people who've been around the club, you know, for too long, people who've, you know, come to the club and don't understand what it is, people who maybe making football decisions or don't know a lot about football. You don't know, because
that's
you don't know what goes on, who makes these choices and who makes these decisions. I mean, I know Ellis Short, people, you know, got the knives out for him, but, you know, and he's not a football person. If he's surrounded himself with the wrong people, that's a his mistake. And if he's made bad managerial appointments, then that's his mistake, and he should carry the can for that. But this is just some bloke who had no vested interest in football.
He's put millions
of pounds into the club, and he's got nothing. He's got nothing back for it. And
but like, this is that's a wider thing. I think that's like the tragedy, in a sense, of modern football, is that you have to almost be grateful to some bloke for pumping this ridiculous amount of money into your football club, who, you're right, he's got no vested interest, and at any point he could walk away. But you know what? Would it be much worse than what it is now if it just had to start again?
Well, a couple of tweets here sort of sum up that situation, and you wonder, like, where we are at the minute. I read a couple of them out. I favoured a couple of them. Michael Arkley says, we've been doing the same cycle for years. Gus was meant to be the one to fix this, just like O'Neill. No one questions the board. And then Gary Jerry saying, hate to see it, but we need a short-term fix. So even if there's no one suitable right now, getting rid of Poyet is key. And that's where we are. Some people are looking further afield, looking at the board and thinking, do we need a change from the top? Other people are pointing out that we've witnessed these short-term fixes before, haven't we? And you look at Sherwood, a villain. Sometimes it does work, but it's just panicky again doing that, isn't it? Well, where are we with it?
Yeah, I mean,
what's for the best?
I think in terms of looking at the board, I think you have to be very careful. I think you have to take our red and white coloured glasses off and have a look at we love the football club. Of course we do. We've been going since God knows we're how old. It's our football club. It's our city. It's our team. Ellis Short, if they were to say, like, Ellis Short goes, why on earth would anybody anywhere across the world, anywhere with millions of pounds, think, tell you what, I'll go in. It hasn't worked for Ellis. He's put £230 million in, but I'll go into the North East. And I'll put that money in, and I think I'll be all right because I know what I'm doing.
And nobody's buying Newcastle, and nobody's buying Villa. So it's not going to happen.
Football needs a rethink. Unfortunately, you can't be the one club that does it on its own. But look at Leeds, look at Portsmouth, like the way they just passed around. Like this used to be like the centre of a community. It was more than just going to watch football. It's like it's a communal thing. Like that's why people go en masse to football. Like Portsmouth, all right, I'm not saying I want Sunderland in League Two, far from it. But at least it's a community run, fan owned football club. It's impossible pretty much to do that at Premier League level. But Christ, what is it? What are we going for anymore? Like, when you go, you're watching complete garbage, a bunch of people who don't give a toss, run by someone who's not even from the country, not even interested in football, has no background in football. So what is it? It's just a shell with the name Sunderland FC that they market at you.
Yeah, but then you go to the other side of the coin, you've got Crystal Palace, who, by and large, were, and they're busy rubbing their hands well already. You know, our fans are saying pound signs about who's going to come in because somebody's going to pay big bucks for them.
Similar with Swansea, there's talk of American... But Swansea, right, that model where it's, and again, similar, Hugh Jenkins running it.
There's a lot of talk saying they don't want it.
But this is the way it's a business now. So if those shareholders who bought in when they were at the lowest ebb and have got them where they are go, I'll have a bit of that coin, why wouldn't you? So they sell up, doesn't matter what the fans want. These Americans or whoever they are get in, it changes.
Well, you've got the biggest football club in the world are run by people who haven't got invested in football and borrowed the money to buy the biggest football in the club in the world, sold them with a load of debt. I mean, how much debt in Manchester United? £600 million or
that
something like that.
That was starting to get to the heart of the matter, I think, which is a lot of our frustrations are obviously born out, like my dad rightly says, if we were winning games, you wouldn't be talking like this. And he's right, because it does, you don't care as much.
It highlights it, doesn't it?
But you're right, we're not putting the money in anymore. I think you're right, he hasn't got money to play with, so you've got to be fair to Congerton on that front. But other clubs haven't spent fortunes, but they've sold well and reinvested properly. We've ran out of saleable assets. I was saying this last year before I thought we were going to go down. What's going to happen? We're not going to be able to bring the quality in. I mean, the biggest mistake, I think, looking at it, and I know it's easy with hindsight, but I was saying at the time we should have sold Wickham. £6 million on the table for him. Get him out. 2 or 3 months of good didn't outweigh that. His attitude's rotten.
He does all this help for heroes, big support the army. He's a big, tough kid. He's a big, tall lad. He does all... He's got this personal trainer, and he does his abs look great and all this. They're brilliant. He couldn't fight his way out of a wet paper bag. Bottled about 3 or 4 different tackles yesterday afternoon, and thinking, strap a pair on, son, and get stuck in. Because he was actually lifting his foot out the road and turning his back like kids used to do at school, and you're like, well, he'll not make the school team. This is a bloke who's been paid thousands upon thousands of pounds, who won't put himself in the line. I've got a lot of respect for the services and all that. Well, you show a bit of guts, then you get stuck in instead of just lifting yourself out the way. You're a big, strong kid, and just it's embarrassing.
I think that was it. That's the thing about yesterday is that, yeah, there is an undercurrent of anger, but that anger's over. It's overridden by, you know, you're sitting there, you're numb, you're not even watching the game when the third one goes in, you're staring around, you're watching the crowd leaving, you're watching the players and their body language, and you're embarrassed because you know that there'll be loads of national journalists and people like that who, you know, within the rights to say what they want, and they will say things about your football club. It's like someone slagging off your girlfriend or your wife or something like that. They'll be telling you, they're embarrassing, they are garbage, and you've got to sit and take it, and it's like, I'm allowed to say that and you're not, and that makes it worse as well. It's really frustrating because they're right, and you walk out of there and you're embarrassed and you're ashamed,
but
more than
getting
angry.
More and more, like what we were just talking about before, that it doesn't even feel like my football club anymore. I forgot we were playing on Saturday for a couple of days last week, and it's like, you're just going along, and what is it?
That's it. You're looking for something, aren't you? You're looking for a spark. Actually, like, what more? Someone like comes in, he might give, you know, do something, and then you think, oh, that was, you know, I went to the game and this happened and I had a great time, or, you know, you live for those moments in games.
You want to see it, but they had a 16-year-old on the bench yesterday.
Oh, I saw that. I saw a picture.
I didn't even realise.
A child. Yeah. All right. It's the time to do it. They were 4-0 up. Nothing to lose. Get the kid on. Give him. But the fact is, he was on the bench to go on. Before the ball was kicked, before they knew they were going to tear us a new one, he was on the bench. They were going to give the kid was there to get a chance. What did we have on the bench yesterday, after he'd done all the talking about it might be right time to give these under-21s a go? Not a single
one. Same old, wasn't it? Like, it's funny with Sherwood. I mean, I've been a massive critic of him. You know, he's a man who sort of proudly proclaims that he's never read a book and stuff. He doesn't exactly come across as, like, you know, a great thinker of the game or anything, but sometimes you can overthink football, and he does seem like primarily just a motivator. But he did bring a few young players in at Spurs, and it seems like he's sort of willing to do it again there, and he's getting the best out of people. I know it's early days.
The thing he's got at Villa, though, he's got the pace.
That's it.
Imagine if he came to Sunderland, he would struggle because he couldn't.
Because we keep coming back to this thing, pace, right? Pace, from day one of the Premier League, pace has always been king. Even with your different models, your Rodgers models or whoever.
Kevin Campbell, people like that back in the day.
Pace has always been king. Yeah, we haven't got any of it all the way throughout the team, and hardly any of it in the whole squad. So how does that come about? If us four guys here, we watch a lot of football, but we're not football experts, I wouldn't say, in terms of being in the game professionally. If we can see that every team needs pace, and that every, you know, how can a guy that's played football at the level Poirier has, how can a bloke like Conger, who's supposedly knows, how do they not know that? How do they not look around the squad and go, no pace here, what do we do?
Well,
now?
That's what he said in the week, Buckley's really important because he's the only one with pace who can get us up the pitch. And then suggested the same about Watmore, and obviously Buckley's injured, but neither of them are involved. I mean, they say the only one with pace is Van Aanholt, and he's a left back.
He can't play left back anymore.
You can't impact the game with pace from left. You can't run the game from left back.
Yeah, I mean, the only way for me now to accommodate Van Aanholt is either you take a chance, as Greg said, as a winger, or you play three centre halves and play with two wing backs. Well, look, that's the only way you can accommodate him, isn't it?
That again.
but it is the only way to accommodate Van Aanholt, because if he does go missing in action like he does every game, then you've got a spare centre-back.
That's the only way to play him. People were raging about the fact he didn't start at Hull and he came on and created the goal.
I know.
And then everyone was saying, oh, well, Van Aanholt. Yeah, and now he played yesterday and
I think he's decent going forward.
He is. He's got a trick in him as well.
If you're relying on him, with your ageing two centre-halves, if you're relying on his pace to get you out of bother at the back, the fact that he goes walkabout, he creates more problems than he solves.
Well, he's gone backwards, though, because, let's be honest, he was very good for 3 or 4 months.
Yes.
And he got injured, you know, and he struggles. It's lack of confidence in the team, lack of form. We've changed the system. He's been in and out of the team. And, like, I don't want to bomb him out too much because I think he's shown that he has something about him.
Is it the first time that he's been in the thick of it in a struggling team?
I mean, I think it speaks volumes that we sort of turning the spotlight onto him when this is his first full season in the Premier League.
But that's another problem, Steve. There's too many of them in that situation.
This, he should have been a sign who comes in and perhaps goes under the radar. I was prepared for him because I know, you know, he's quite erratic, and I was prepared for him to have the odd bad game and stuff, but because the other players aren't doing anything, it's highlighting it more, isn't it? And we're now, yeah, exactly. And it shouldn't be. He should be protected more than he is, I think, is what I'm getting at.
You've got Liam Bridcut playing that role. I mean, you know, you might as well have had a piece of tracing paper there. He just offered zero protection.
I do feel a bit for him, though, because when he's on the pitch, everyone gives him the ball. He does okay in games, but people seem to like vent at him like he's his fault.
Going back to John O'Shea.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's played at the highest level, and yet he was willing to just, he, all right, made a mistake for the flight of the ball, and accept that it happened. But then it just shrugged his, he more or less shrugged his shoulders and spread his arms and like sort of said, well, nothing to do with me anymore. Really, at that level, at the level you've played at, when would that ever been acceptable under Keane? When would that ever been acceptable under Alex Ferguson? I mean, he just, he wouldn't have dared.
Keane would have lamped him if he'd done something like that.
he might have made the mistake, but he'd have turned around and tried to get in. He mightn't have gotten back because he's not the quickest anymore. But he would have tried. He wouldn't have just shrugged his shoulders and turned. But he was allowed yesterday, or for whatever he thought was okay, to just shrug his shoulders and say, not my problem anymore. You deal with it.
Well, but how many players...
That third Agbonlahor goal was just hilarious.
It was
like,
ludicrous, wasn't it?
He just walked through and passed it into the corner on it with his left foot. It was just surreal.
Well, coming back to the big cut thing, it wasn't so much him I was getting at. It's more what you were saying about Van Aanholt, first full season. Bridcut, kind of first full season. Who else you got? Wickham, he's been around, but he's never played a full season of top flight football, first full season. Then you've got these aging players who, even someone like Pantelimon's really in and out of his former club. But then you've got like Brown and O'Shea who are kind of coming to the end of their careers. Revier, first full season in the Premier League, but coming to the end of his career. The only ones you've got with a wealth of Premier League experience are sort of Larson, Catamull when he's available.
Fletcher, who's been in a relegation battle every season.
Every club he's been at. Obviously, Johnson will not go into. But then the other players, like you're bringing in Alvarez. Don't even know if he was any good in Italy. Certainly he's not very good in this country. Giaccherini, he's not been able to string enough games together. Now he's injured. Gomez has played a lot of Premier League football in relegation battles. You go through that team, where's the character? Where's the spine? The backbone? Where's the winners? You've got it's almost like a donut effect. Some youngsters, some older players, and then a bit of a soft centre with very little spine to it. But this has been coming for years. This feels worse than last season. We've not been in the bottom three, but once we're in it, we'll not get back out of it. It's going to be like quicksand. I don't think Gus will be gone.
Sleepwalking a relegation under O'Neill, this was saying yesterday, this is like, you know, skydiving without a parachute towards relegation. It's just like happened. It's just been gone. That's like that. And I don't know how this has happened.
It tells its own story that side hasn't been in the bottom three all season because it's...
But Burnley's win yesterday, on Saturday, whenever this is going out, you know. That's it, isn't it? That's the killer.
Yeah.
That's like...
Because people were clinging on to the whole, there's three clubs worse than us thing, weren't they? And certainly in the case of
4 points in
QPR and Leicester. QPR and Leicester, you would think so. But Leicester's got to come up here. So that's 3 points for them straight away, isn't it?
Well, that's the kind of game they'll win, isn't it?
Yeah,
but Palace will beat us. Yeah. No doubt.
Did anybody... I've got to admit I did, but did anybody else sort of get up this morning, turn the telly on, look at the papers to see if he was still there? Because I genuinely did. I genuinely put the telly on this morning and thought he might be gone.
I was thinking, usually the Sundays, the headlines start coming out about 10 to 12, don't they? Like with Twitter now, that's when it starts to circulate. And I didn't stay up. I was watching the telly, went to bed or whatever. But I did contemplate thinking I might stay up to see what happens. But, I mean, on the subject of him, I mean... I don't think I am, unfortunately.
Have you got off?
I have rang the bell, end of the line, I think, as well, called relegation. I asked some of our listeners on
Twitter if people were still on the Gus bus. A couple of decent answers, actually. Daniel Shellard says, I've pinged the bell and put the Kindle in my rucksack. Chris Dixon says, like the 18 bus, Grindon Circle, the Gus bus is getting nowhere fast, so I've got off. That's relevant to me because I used to get that bus and he used to just go all the way around the world. And the best one from Dino Endo, who's a regular listener, saying, I'm staying on the bus, but I'm going to have a slash on the back seat.
I like it.
Didn't say a slash, but I've made that more radio friendly. I think it's like,
you know, there's a few people who've been, you know, didn't want to report for a while. That's fine, you know. It's not about being right or whatever.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
It's about the situation, and you know, the logic. I think January will be the month.
It was important. It was important that people give Poyet a chance to get this right, because you can't complain and say we want to play two strikers, we want to play this style of football, and then when he starts to do it or try it, you can't then, you know, you've got to expect some sort of inconsistency, haven't you? The question is how far does it go before you say, okay, enough's enough?
I guess that's where we are. I don't think you can play two up front with this squad. I just don't
think you can play anything with this squad.
You'd have to, all you have to do is you have to play four, like almost like a 4-5-1.
But the thing is, yes, you're going to stay in the game. He'd gone with whatever plan he went with, and like we're 4-0 down, and nothing's changed. Like, if I can say it's not good enough, he can say it's not good enough. I don't know what, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't know what he could do with the resources he had available to him. But, I mean, that's down to him and others anyways.
It's a collective disaster.
It's been going on for ages.
At the weekend, it was noticeable, obviously, how many people left before half-time. But I was still with my mate at the match like a couple of weeks ago, and before half-time, he went, oh, I'm going for a pee. And he didn't come back. I saw him after the game. I said, I thought you were only going for a pee. Went, I did, in the Victory Club, because it was that bad. I got out at the bottom of the stairs. Somebody opened the door, and I thought, yeah, right. And he just continued on walking. And that was a couple of weeks ago. That was before it was that bad as it was yesterday. So you can imagine how long he stayed yesterday.
There's just been
10 minutes.
There's been too much over the last 3 months. With, you know, you look at the first half performances in games against Liverpool, Queen's Park Rangers. You look at the whole game.
Bradford game, I mean, that makes me think, coming
up West Ham on the weekend, we still have a problem dealing with teams that are like a bit of a battle. We're going to get absolutely tonked on the weekend. Mm. We're going to get battered.
Lots to look forward to then.
Yeah. Tune in on Thursday where we'll preview that hammering at West Ham.
When you look at the manager thing though, I mean, you shouldn't talk about him like he's gone, but then it's always the options. You know, I saw a few people saying, oh, what about Laudrup? It's like, well, Laudrup would have exactly the same problem because he'd want to play a style of football that the players couldn't play. So the kind of manager you're looking at is more the Pulis end of the market, that type of manager.
So you're talking probably Paul Lambert, who's recently become available, and people wouldn't be happy with that. To be fair to Lambert, you know, it's so, at Norwich, he played quite nice football under him. It was like cut and thrust and that. But no one would be happy if he was appointed.
I don't know how long we've got left, but if anybody mentions the W word, I'm going to have to leave here early.
I don't know what that is.
I know.
Warnock.
The main candidate obviously is Ball, but it would be unfair to give it to him on short term again. I think they'd have to give him a longer term deal. I don't think they should be, you know, it's not really fair to get him in as a caretaker.
I don't think they turn. I'd be very surprised if they turn to Pauly again. I think, without wanting to put words into people's mouths, he seems to have been.
Nick Congdon has his coaching badges, and he was a former player.
You wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he just says, I'll do it. Keane in the season.
What if Roy Keane came back, what would you think? See. Like,
genuinely,
just seriously, yesterday
yes.
I thought about it and thought,
I'd love it.
Genuinely,
I know it ended badly, and I know
he got so many things wrong, and I know there's still question marks over his personality and his style and that, but I loved when he was at my football club. I've got to be honest, I loved it when
That's the last time there was a real connection.
Do you know what I mean? For whatever reason, for good reason or bad, came out of Roy's mouth, we were seen all over the world because Roy Keane was talking about Sunderland Football Club. That's the genuine impact that he has.
To be fair to Roy, he generally won the winnable home game. He did. That's all you want as a fan. And also, you know, something that was instilled in him by his Man United playing career was how the sides went until the very last minute. And we scored a lot of late goals that kept us up that first season. And of course, you don't think that now, do you? You don't.
Do you know what else we had?
He filled the team with the wrong characters, didn't he? And that's the thing that paid the price. Yeah. But
you know what we did have? Pace. Going battering again. Yeah. We did have pace. You know, even Carlos Edwards was, before he got the bad injuries, he was quick. You know, even
Campbell
Ross Wallace was quick. Fraser Campbell was quick. quick.
Richardson was had a bit of pace.
Yes, yeah. He did.
At the time,
Richardson
did, yeah.
Really quick. Yeah. Well, if we're honest, right?
Cameron Jones was quick.
What do you think is going to happen? I think you'll still be here to the end of the season.
I do as
I've
well.
Got
I
a
think
little
the, I, do, yeah. I think the club are going to try and certainly see.
I just get this. Well, I get a feeling that they'll be thinking about what they're going to do. I mean, I can't. The likelihood is we're going to get beat at the weekend, and if we get beat off Newcastle, there's a chance that we're probably in the bottom three. Then they've got
the
six
three,
games to get out of it. But the logic says to me that if they're going to do something, it'll be now, because it's two games to the derby. We've got an international break coming up. So if you get rid of him now and change it, he's got one game, then he's got 2 weeks to do something before the derby.
Do you not just you feel like you're waiting for it? I feel like I'm waiting for it to happen now.
Yeah.
Like Craig sort of predicted.
That's what I mean.
Excuse the pun, but we're going to get hammered at West Ham. And if that's the case, then it's like, oh, does he go this week? And then if he loses the derby, does he go this week? You feel like biding time, waiting for it to happen.
Yeah. I hadn't realised we're so close to the end of the season, and I think that's telling.
Yeah.
I think the fact that
he
hasn't
Burnley
gone now
well.
Is very telling.
The Burnley result,
yeah.
The result yesterday, the manner of the defeat, the fact that we came to a little section of games where we're like, we've got West Brom, Hull, Man United and Villa. West Brom, Man United, Hull, Villa. You're looking for, really, you're looking for 6 or 7 points in those games if you want to turn your season around. And they've got through that little spell and they've got 2 points. It's like, it's not acceptable. And there's been a few of those where we've gone, well, we've got this game and this game, there's a chance to build. And we come out with either nothing or 1 point.
It's
happened again.
Yeah, he's deconstructed the build and never mind started building it yet. But if he got rid of him, who is it to come in? That's another problem, maybe for another day.
People dismiss that, but it's relevant, isn't it?
It is. I mean, there's few options out there.
Well, we're joking. He is not doing it.
Right. Well,
can
we managed to get through 50-odd minutes on that, actually, which is quite surprising.
We
could have went on, but we've got to get to the studio as well.
Sorry.
We can't end like that.
No,
we can't end like that.
End on Pardew if you want.
Well, we all took the mic about when they got Pardew, right, and thought Bruce was better. Pardew's a better manager than Bruce, I think, or he's on a similar level, but Pardew's proven over years that he's a better manager than Gus Poyet.
Mm.
It's just whether we like it or not, it's proof's in the pudding.
Unfortunately, that's the note we're going out on.
Get Allardyce in the summer.
We'll never know anyway. We might turn up and win at West Ham and everything's all rosy again.
No, I wouldn't.
Come along Thursday and listen.
Then
come along.
Then we all
won't. Don't actually come along, yeah. They won't let you in if you come
800
along.
800 people
smashing the Gus bus up.
Right. All right. Thanks for listening. Over and out.